viva la raza.
Hello and welcome to episode 2 of the Match of the Week podcast here on the Place to Be Nation podcast network. I am Tim, and as always, I am joined by Tanner. Tanner, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, Tim. How are you doing today?
Doing good. I just got back from the gym. I got a good pump in, you know?
That's good.
I'm ready to go. I'm amped. I am jacked for this, as they would say.
I have not been to the gym today or this week, so I guess that makes me less pumped than you.
So I'm actually, this probably is a good question, but I do wonder how much of wrestling podcasters go to the gym on a regular basis.
Ooh, I can't be counted regular basis. I'm like a twice per month guy.
Got it. Good deal. Well, hey, you know, last week we had our first podcast that we released on the great exploding barbed wire cage death match between Atsushi Onita and Genichiro Tenryu from May 5th, 1994, which is your favorite match of all time.
It is. Tim, I got the numbers back. Most successful podcast ever.
Just really?
The most successful one. I've crunched the numbers. I've estimated about 2 billion people.
Wow. I wonder how many of those came from Bangladesh. I think we're big in Bangladesh.
I would imagine. That's usually the demographic I hit.
Emerging market Bangladesh in terms of podcast hits. Very, very glad to hear that. That's great to know. That means we're doing the right thing here with this here podcast. But you know, we talked about your favorite match last week. This week we talk about my favorite match, and it is very much canon. It is very much not a, you know, your match, famous, 2 famous wrestlers, maybe not as famous a match, but definitely a great match. My match is 2 famous wrestlers in a fairly famous match. It is from No Way Out 2004 in February of that year. It is the WWE Championship match between Brock Lesnar and Eddie Guerrero. And, you know, I picked this match mainly because I have a personal affinity to it. And essentially, I was at this show. So that gives the bias away. I mean, that's basically the bias for this. I remember I did a podcast with Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave when they had the Wrestling Culture podcast going on, and we talked about our 10 Desert Island matches, and basically we came about the matches that we'd want to have and that we wouldn't want to live without, and I picked this as my number one because it is my personal like favorite match of all time, and it still holds true today. I mean, there have been a couple of matches that have tried to, you know, sneak up and take it down, but you know, this is a match that for me really holds a big place in my heart. My general wrestling fandom is the first pay-per-view I've ever been to. I don't actually think I've been to a pay-per-view since, which is really odd. But yeah, like this is a huge deal to me as a fandom, my personal fandom. And it was at a great time for, at the time, wrestling fans. Of course, in retrospect, some things going on at that point probably weren't the best, but it really was a heck of a match. And you know, before we kind of go into the details, Tanner, you know, what were your original thoughts about this match? I mean, this match happened, you know, 14 years ago, right? We're almost 14 years to the day, actually. We're not that good, folks. What do you think of this match, considering that you probably saw this at first maybe when you were 8 or 9, and now you've seen it with thousands upon thousands of hours of wrestling behind you now?
Well, Tim, you would like to think that I watched it when I was 8 or 9, but what if I told you I had never watched it until this podcast?
Wow. We're not turning this into the Always Barry Tanner's podcast. This is not going to happen on this podcast.
Because I didn't start watching wrestling till the tail end of 2007. So, just for some reason, this match, I'd always heard, you know, the great, like, oh, you need to check it out. I've seen, like, practically a ton of stuff from 04. I've just never watched Guerrero Lesnar from 04. And it's pretty good.
Pretty good, right?
It's weird watching it with 2018 eyes, though, like watching that match in 2018, just because, I mean, obviously everything, you know, Lesnar's out of the company, you know, what, a month and a half later, and, you know, Eddie tragically passes away a year and a half later. Like, it's weird watching that match. Like, it's like that match could have only happened in that moment in time, or it would have never happened.
Yeah, so let's kind of get into that a little bit. So the big thing around this time frame is that smart wrestling fans at the time knew a few things. First, that Brock Lesnar's contract was coming up after WrestleMania 20, and it was widely regarded that he was going to leave the company. Now, it wasn't confirmed, but on top of that, there was kind of this weird thing was that they were building up a program with Goldberg. Mm-hmm. Goldberg had come back for his 1 year run, and they did some stuff at the Royal Rumble, and basically Brock and Goldberg got into it. Goldberg, you know, got knocked out of the Royal Rumble by Brock, and that that basically started up what a lot of people thought would be, oh yeah, that's an obvious WrestleMania title match scenario. But what ended up happening was that once people realized that both those guys' contracts were coming up at the same time, well, they didn't want to put that title match on between two guys leaving a company because it would just fall flat on its face.
Oh, yeah. And so, this WrestleMania was in Madison Square Garden.
Right. So WrestleMania 21. The literally smartest WWF fans, WWE fans, were going to be there at this show. And so it was basically concocted that Eddie would earn a title shot, which he did. But it was also 100% telegraphed to the smart fans that Eddie was going to win.
Yeah.
No doubt about it. And so there's a couple of things to this match that always stick with me is that you knew, if you were smart to wrestling, that Eddie was going to win. But this was also the only time these guys ever faced each other.
Yeah.
That is amazing. Like, the fact that those two things are simultaneously, you know, true at this time, it just blows my mind.
The fact, again, there was about, because Lesnar is leaving wrestling to pursue an NFL career, if I'm not mistaken, correct?
Correct.
Which, wow, okay. So Lesnar's leaving, Goldberg's leaving, and I'm just trying to imagine if that, because I've seen the Lesnar Goldberg match from WrestleMania 20. Yes. It is a pile of shit. I could not imagine.
It is not a good piece of professional wrestling business.
No, like they even had, because Steve Austin ended up being the special ref for that match.
Yeah. So the reason Steve Austin was put into that match was because they needed to put somebody over at the end, and they put over Austin.
They put over Austin in 2004, who to this day, you know, obviously hasn't wrestled a match again. So it's a great piece of work.
And so you know, and then leading up to the match, it was a pretty interesting story. Eddie, of course, had battled his demons, and he would succumb to those demons the year after this. But they built it in on the storyline. Mm-hmm. There is the now classic that has become one of the best memes in wrestling history of Brock Lesnar with the mariachi band and him wearing the sombrero and dancing in front of it to taunt Eddie.
It's a great gif.
It's literally one of the greatest gifts of all time and definitely one of the best SmackDown segments of all time. But then you get into the match itself. And first off, this is one of the – I can't undersell how hot this crowd was for Eddie. There was a huge Latin presence for Eddie at this crowd because you're in a heavily – you know, Latin influenced community like San Francisco and the Bay Area. And so they were out in full force. And so they were really, really behind Eddie for this one. And, you know, the match itself, they were given 30 minutes, which was something that while they were given a lot of time back then to kind of build these main events, you were seeing more like Triple H style 30 minute matches at that point.
You were seeing trash.
You were not seeing good wrestling at that point. And so to see these guys get 30 minutes, two things. First, Eddie worked well within like that 15 minute range. Like he had really never gone too long in a match in the WWE. Like he had really gone really 15, maybe 20 minutes when it came to some of his most famous matches.
Yeah.
And so he had really kind of been in the sweet spot. But then he and Brock, who also is not known for going long at all in matches at that point, outside of maybe the Undertaker matches, and sometimes, well, the Kurt Angle Iron Man match, which, yeah. But 30 minutes with these guys, and they do a great 30 minutes. It's a great, great build for these 30 minutes.
It doesn't feel like 30 minutes at all. Like, watching it, and I guess it kind of works out because you have Lesnar in, like, his athletic prime, and you have, you know, Eddie, who, I mean, again, couldn't, like, I've never seen a boring Eddie match. And they feel, I mean, they filled the time great. And with, I mean, it's weird because it's a pretty basic match. There's nothing too insane in the match. And, like, it, because I had always assumed coming into the match, I'm like, oh, okay. So, like, I knew the finish, obviously. I assumed it was a Brock squash up until Eddie won. Not the case at all. Like, this is a, I argue to say, an Eddie-dominated match.
So stylistically, yes, stylistically for sure. The first 10 minutes of this are just Brock going to town on Eddie. Like,
yeah,
it's really, you know, it's really funny because I think at the time I wrote something back when I wrote for Larry Zonka on 411 years ago. I wrote that this was very much a Sting Vader setup, but it's really not, because Sting and Vader worked more of a 50-50 style match. Mm-hmm. And, like, looking back at this, this was Eddie giving Brock a lot.
Yeah.
And realizing, like, hey, I have to really figure out kind of unique ways to get him down, because I'm not really going to be able to do much on my feet against him. And you saw him try a couple of things. Like, you saw him try and do the Rana out of the corner, and that really, really weird swinging power bomb that Brock does off of it, that when I saw it live, I was like, what the hell are they doing? There's something bad going to happen here. And it just turned into this, like, slam that Brock did.
Yeah. But,
you know, that's the other thing, was that Eddie kind of tried to pick his spots here, and he did it in really just natural sounding ways, natural feeling ways. He wasn't trying to force the issue with his moves. He was like, no, it's like, I'm facing a guy who outweighs me by 100 pounds. He might be more athletic than I am. I need to figure out a way to slow this guy down. And he does it by, you know, using his guile, using his smarts, and really just figuring out a way with his experience to take down Brock. And that sets the story up for the match.
Yeah. The legwork in the match, because again, during this time period, like, limb work in the WWE match was like Triple H just dropping a bunch of elbows on a body part. And that was pretty much it. but this, like, the legwork actually feels organic. Like, oh, okay, that's something that should happen here. Like, it's not, you know, again, with Eddie just being so much smaller than Brock, and also being like something crazy like 15 years younger or older than Brock, like, he has to be pretty crafty with it. And he gets pretty crafty with it when he starts working over the leg. And it, I mean, it works great in the grand scheme of the story, because, like, he works over the leg enough where Lesnar, like, just can't do anything, but he works it over enough. It's like, yeah, okay, I can see how Lesnar couldn't be able to pull off that move. And which, yeah. I mean, yeah, it was great.
The best thing about it is also that, you know, he made sure that the way he got back on offense was that Lesnar made the mistake. He hit that high knee earlier, which is one of my, like, favorite Lesnar spots, was when he would just be like, hi, I'm 300 pounds, but I can also have, like, a 3-foot vertical jump. So I can knee you literally on the nose whenever I want to. And so he does this really athletic knee. And then, of course, it pays off, because then he takes the Harley Race bump off the second one. Right. Mm-hmm. And then that's like, that is when it's like, okay, that's how they're going to do this. And it's a great way to make that match happen. Then you, like you said, Eddie just figure out a way, okay, I'm going to really work this knee. And he works in the STF a couple of times.
A great looking STF, by the way.
Really good. So for a guy who's 5'7", shoot, maybe 5'5", and on a guy like Brock Lesnar, to get it in like that, like, that was, I was really impressed. I didn't get a chance. I was behind hard cam on it, and so I saw it from kind of behind, and so I didn't really get a chance to see how well it was cinched in, but watching it back on tape, I think later that night or the next night, whenever, like, I was really, like, that was one of the better STFs I've ever seen. Like, I have a feeling, like, John Cena was like watching that, and well, he hasn't done a really good STF.
Yeah, I was about to say, I never did it. He was like, "Oh, yeah, that's what a good one looks like." I would have the opposite way.
So, but it was really unique, and I really like how they really built up this idea that that's how Eddie was going to get him. He was like, "Okay, you know, I have to do something to slow him down. That's really the only thing I can think of." And it ended up really working out that way. And once that happened and you got it to be more of an even matchup, then that's when they really started doing this really awesome stretch run. And it really turned into more than just a great match, but a memorable match. And yeah. one of those matches, I think a lot of people, when they look back on it, like, oh, yeah, that's why I really like this match.
And it's crazy, too, because, you know, a lot of people, especially in more WWE-style main events, which I don't think this is a WWE-style main event by any means, but, you know, there's the Goldberg run-in where Goldberg comes in, right, and spears Lesnar. But I never even knew that happened until I watched the match. Like, people just don't talk, like, because usually when a run-in happens in wrestling, it's like, I can't believe it ran in, ruined a great match, or blah, blah, blah. Like, the Goldberg run-in is completely, like, like, it doesn't matter. Right. Almost like for a viewer, like, obviously, you know, story wise and match wise, it obviously mattered, but like for a viewer, it was like, that didn't take away from my experience at all. In fact, it probably enhanced it a little. And I think it's a shame what happened to Lesnar and Goldberg, you know, at WrestleMania 20, and they had, you know, that atrocious match. But like, it's cool that run-in worked as well as it did, because if that run-in doesn't get over, or for some reason Goldberg just decides to, you know, because his whole thing in the WWE was like, I'm hothead, I'll attack everybody. Like, if he would have speared Eddie there, like, that would have, you know, that match would have fell off the rails.
So earlier in the night, they worked an angle where Goldberg and Lesnar actually came face to face, but Lesnar got taken away and handcuffed by police, right? So then the story is that he came out, and if you see him, he has a broken handcuff. So he broke the cuffs and was able to go out there and do what he did to Lesnar. And you're right about that. It's like, yeah, Eddie got the win by cheating to win. He countered the F5 with a DDT under the belt and then hit the frog splash. But yeah, Goldberg didn't really help Eddie win. Eddie still won the match. Like, Eddie still hit the moves that he needed to do. He didn't get a cover off the spear, you know, anything like that. But I just love that. And they did the whole cheat to win thing with the belt, which was great. I think the way that they built that into the match, that was a great near fall. That was one of the best near falls. Like, I like thought that was going to be the finish, even though I kind of hoped it wasn't. Like, that was one of the best near falls I've seen in a while. And but yeah, like, I really like how they built that finish up and got Goldberg involved with it.
Yeah, and again, I didn't know about the angle that Lesnar and Goldberg had during the pay-per-view. So that's, again, cool. Just, yeah, I'm glad Eddie didn't, like, Goldberg didn't put Eddie on top of Lesnar, and that's how the match ends, because I don't think this match needed that, and especially with the huge, you know, the Latino presence in the crowd, like, it wouldn't have worked.
Right.
The match would have been like, oh, like, cool, Eddie won, but kind of sucks that he couldn't do it on his own. So, but with this, it feels like Eddie did it on his own, even though, I mean, right, Goldberg hit a spear on Lesnar, but it feels like Eddie did it on his own because Eddie was never aware that Goldberg even hit the ring.
Right.
So, you know, so in Eddie's mind, he did it all legit. Like, the DDT, like, it just so happens the belt was there.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. And Lesnar's the one that introduced him. Yeah, it's a whole thing. It's great. It's a masterclass of Eddie's WWE persona of, right, being this guy trying to, you know, battle his demons. And in this match, he does. It's just circumstance. And I think that's really cool. And there's not a whole lot of, like, subtle stuff like that anymore.
Yeah. And I think they had to pay mind to it because of what they did with the story, like setting it up. Right. And it was really neat that they built that into the match. And then obviously him winning that pop was ridiculous. It's one of the best pops you'll see from a championship win ever.
Oh, yeah. Him getting in the crowd is like one of those like just memorable images of wrestling, period. Yeah,
somebody had the combination Mexican flag, California state flag that he was kind of like holding around. And there's that really memorable image. I think I had it as my desktop background for a while of him with the belt in one hand and that flag in the other hand. That him leaning back. One of those memorable images that anybody thinks of with Eddie. And he had his family there, obviously, to see it. And then if people remember from the Eddie Guerrero DVD that came out basically right after this, there's that great video of him talking on the phone with Vicky and talking about the win. And he basically breaks down in the locker room with the belt on his lap. And it really was for people like, you know, us who had followed Eddie for, you know, for me, it would have been about 6 or 7 years when I got smart to wrestling at that point. That it was just really neat to see that happen. Obviously Benoit was the other guy, but you know circumstances have changed with him, and so to see Eddie get his moment like that was a big deal for a lot of people. And it was one of those culminations that I think it was a long time coming in the eyes of some, and was also for a guy like me who was able to be lucky enough to see that live. It's something that I always remember, and it's something that it will always make me a fan of it. Yeah,
it's like I couldn't even imagine being there. I had no idea you were there live until you mentioned it.
Yeah.
So, like, I can see how like something like this, especially with Eddie, not necessarily being an indie guy, but Eddie just being like, kind of like an AJ Styles sort of thing. Like he's always in like the number two, or he's working, like ROH or something. And like for him to get his due, especially being considering not old by any means, but older in terms of wrestlers, seeing him get his due like that is kind of cool. Granted, you have to like, what would have happened if Lesnar wasn't leaving? And there's a million other questions to go along with it, but it's still cool that Eddie could get his moment in the sun, especially for a build up to WrestleMania. It's not like he won this nowhere. I mean, he was champion going into the 20th anniversary of WrestleMania, which is huge.
Right. And that was the other thing too, was they had a natural pairing with him and Angle afterwards, and so that was really, a good thing to go into. And then Angle put him over, and they did some stuff throughout the summer. They did the JBL feud after this with Eddie that really put JBL over and made
The JBL matches, the I Quit match is fantastic.
Yeah. And then the first match, the Judgment Day match, with of course the bloodletting, Eddie basically
Yeah,
that match. The I Quit match is good too, but I mean that Judgment Day match is.
I was thinking of the Judgment Day match.
Yeah, that match, man, unreal, unfreaking real at that time. So a couple matches to keep in mind. We talked about the JBL match, but there was another match that came out a couple months after this on SmackDown with him versus The Big Show, Eddie and The Big Show. And I think that if people are looking for like another match like this, it's shorter. It's only about 15 minutes or so. But this match, I think, is in some ways better constructed than the Brock Lesnar match, mainly because I think Eddie has to play from underneath more. And Big Show was kind of an overwhelming presence at that time. And he was really one of those guys that, was 500 pounds, but he was still semi-athletic. So he could do some things that you just like that it shouldn't really happen. And so there's a really good kind of pair off there as far as that this match is concerned. And so I think watching that match and then watching, there's a couple of matches. I think that's the big match though, April 15th. Like I would check that match out too, because I remember when people were watching kind of the Eddie title run just to see what type of title run he was going to have, and eventually became a title run all summer. Like they were wondering how he was going to do against guys obviously bigger than him, like JBL, like Big Show. And that Big Show match, I think a lot of people would really enjoy.
Yeah, I didn't even, because I really liked Big Show around that time period, just because he's so big and still so good. I didn't even know that match happened. So yeah, I'll definitely have to check that one out.
There was also a match with him and Cena versus Brock and Big Show in February. It was one of the lead ups to this match. It was the SmackDown, like two SmackDowns before that match happened. So that's another one from February 12th that I think people should check out too. just kind of get you ready for this. But, you know, it is a match now with posterity. Let me ask you this, Tanner. Do you put this on the scale of best Brock Lesnar WWE matches? Where, now that you've seen this, where do you think this ranks in his best WWE matches?
Oh, goodness. I would say off the top of my head, probably it's in his top 10, but okay. It's in the 8 to 10 range.
Okay.
So, I would say. Great, fantastic match, but Lesnar's just, you know, had a great career.
So you would have probably what, like Undertaker, No Mercy, you would have the AJ match, you would have the Cena Extreme Rules match. Like, what are some other matches you think you'd have?
I would have those three matches. I would have the Reigns match at WrestleMania 30 or 31. I would have the Punk match from SummerSlam.
Okay, interesting. Okay.
I would have the other Undertaker Hell in a Cell match from a couple of years ago.
Oh, really?
And probably the Goldberg match, the most recent Goldberg
match. Okay, okay. See, yeah, and that's I'm actually happy that you kind of brought those up, because one of the things that I think I took away was that, you know, considering where Brock was, this is the last great Brock Lesnar match for basically 7 years, right?
Yeah,
and
8 years. Yeah.
And before he came back, did the Extreme Rules match with Cena, and it was just like the best piece of business that you could probably do that time.
All-time classic.
Yeah. And so I do kind of find it interesting that this match exists, and there's a lot of people who are really still putting his like most recent work, and then the No Mercy Undertaker match from 2002, like amongst those great matches. And I do kind of wonder, this is one of the reasons why I brought this match up in the first place, was you being a younger guy and having really gotten into wrestling more recently than I am, how much posterity has changed this match. And I do think it's interesting, and I'm not disagreeing with you at all, because all those matches you brought up, like, without a doubt belong in the conversation with this match. And it is really one of those things where you have to figure out, okay, Brock is way different now than he was 14 years ago. How do you bridge those two things? How do you take, you know, this match and make it so that it was anywhere close in scope or scale to what he's been doing during his most recent run?
Yeah, it kind of just goes to show what kind of genetic freak Brock Lesnar is. The fact that he's had two great wrestling careers separated by like 10 years.
Yeah.
It's kind of insane. I mean, granted, you can make the argument now he's working part-time, so all his matches should be great. But at the same time, he's like 40 years old and had colon cancer. Like, people forget that Brock Lesnar has had multiple feet of his colon removed.
Yeah.
Of his intestines removed. And the fact that he still does like half the stuff he can do is insane. Yeah. Like, I mean, granted, don't get me wrong, he's had some stinkers in his current run, but when he decides to show up, he shows up.
It is. And I would say that for me, you know, I think I do hold this maybe, and I wonder if I should kind of bring this up. I think I might actually post this on Twitter and kind of see what the response is, and we'll have it for next week's show. But what I do kind of wonder, I don't know if there's another really career you could look at. Like, I think maybe people would look like Shawn Michaels or something like that, but a lot of people, including myself, aren't the biggest fans of Michaels' late career, right? And so I do kind of wonder what other wrestlers there are that you could look at that compare to Brock. I mean, maybe Taker is one of them. But he was continuous, right? He worked for 25 straight years, essentially, and then became a mega part-timer like the last three or four, even more so than Brock. But I do kind of wonder if there's anybody else that you could kind of compare Brock to and kind of say that a match this old really does, you know, stand up to stuff he's done recently. And even recency bias can't take that away from him. Like, this does seem like a match that has held up. It does stand the test of time. But you're right. Like, if you look at like even the AJ match that happened 4 months ago, you know, that match from an athleticism standpoint was built up in such a way that it was very it kind of, and that was a sprint. That was 15 minutes as opposed to this being 30. But like, there's just two way different matches. And a lot of that has to do with while Brock was booked. But I really am kind of curious what other people think to see if there is that gap that we just talked about, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy to like look at somebody like Lesnar's career and just, I mean, the fact that it even exists pretty much is just wild.
Yeah. So, but yeah, you know, we'll kind of wrap things up here. But any final thoughts on this before we put this one to bed?
Don't be like me and watch it if you haven't, because it's a great match. Probably the second or third best match in WWE in 2004, and may not even be the best Eddie match of 2004, which is saying a lot about Eddie's run that year.
Right.
But I watch it. Don't be like me.
Yeah, it is on the award-winning World Wrestling Federation Network. You can get it $9.99 a month. But yeah, you know, I'm glad we talked about this. And now it is all a mystery going forward. How we're going to kind of pick our matches out. And so we'll keep it in the can for now. But next week we'll have a match that both of us kind of agree on to talk to. And then from then on, it's going to just be picking out what we think would be good professional wrestling matches to talk about. So I'm really excited about this. We've gotten the favorites out of the way, and now we move forward.
Yeah, I'm pumped. It's been two super fun shows.
For sure, yeah, so far. Without a doubt. And so hopefully we keep this going. And next week we'll have our first non-favorite match of the week, but definitely something that you guys should watch. So Tanner, thanks for joining me as always.
Thank you for having me today.
And thank you for having me. I never know how to like say that. Like, it's like, we're co-hosts. So,
yeah, it's weird. We're co-hosts and we kind of came up with this idea together. Yeah. So I was like, okay, I'm giving it to Tim. Here we go.
I'm like, okay. I'll try that again. Tanner, good show.
Thank you. Thank you. And good show to you, Tim.
All right. Well, thanks for everybody for listening. You can follow me at Mr. Tim Livingston. That's Mr. Tim Livingston. You can follow Tanner at.
You can follow me at Tanner1495 and also listen to my non-wrestling podcast, which you can follow on Twitter at AYCH Podcast.
Very good. All right. We'll see you guys next week. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.